I love movies.
Here's the thing, Peter. Yeah. You're stepping over a line now. You're stepping over a line. You know you are.
I love watching them.
Why not let us
Because it's so much fun, Chan. Get it?
Gosh, I love movies.
Drew, this is what I appreciate about you.
Okay.
In relation to this show only. There are other things I appreciate about you, but you know what I mean. So, let's start here. Tuesday night, I get a text from my buddy. He says, movie trivia at Puritan. I'll see you there. And I said, of course I'm there, right? It's my buddy Cam Furches. So, I'm going to Puritan, and I park, and I look over. Who do I see? Drew Watzke and Kate Watzke getting out of their cars. I rolled down my window. I said, hey. And you look at me. You go, hey. Both of us doing movie trivia. Didn't even talk about it before.
Yeah. Completely independent of
you
each other.
You care about movies. Not just in here, man. Mm-hmm. Out there in the real world. You care about this stuff.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that about you.
This isn't for fun, Heath. This is an art that we are both dedicated to.
This is art. This is life. My team, I'm being honest, my team won movie trivia.
Yes.
We did not miss a single question.
Very impressive.
I would assume that you guys got pretty close yourself.
There was
10 questions and a bonus, I think?
Right, so like 12 total points, I think.
Yeah.
And we missed two.
You missed the Love Lies Bleeding question, didn't
we
you?
We did, yep.
Yeah, that was for real sickos only.
And then the last line of this movie is, hey, Lewis, this is the start of a great friendship, or that's a paraphrase.
The start of a beautiful relationship. Mm-hmm. Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
One of the most iconic lines in movie history.
We were like, I think that's Casablanca. And then my team talked ourselves out of it.
Oh my goodness, that sucks.
Which, it didn't matter, because we missed Love Lies Bleeding, but...
Yeah, if you missed Love Lies Bleeding, you didn't have a chance. Just remember that. It's not, because, so, I got in there just a little bit late, right?
Yeah.
And my team wrote down the Iron Claw, and they were like, oh, Heath, we don't know about this one. Is it the Iron Claw where Kristen Stewart's a gym owner? I said, no. Different A24 movie, thank you very much. But one of yours, Whiplash, was on there. You know, can I be honest with you? The questions were easier than I thought they were going to be. It was just name the movie.
Yep.
I thought it was going to be like, who won the Oscar in 1938 or something like
and
that.
And most of the questions were like, what I thought were pretty easy to be able to get.
Well, it was like, one was like, I've never even seen this movie, but it was John Travolta as a dancer in the disco scene in New York.
Right.
I was Saturday Night Fever.
Right, yeah.
Everybody knows that one, you know?
Yeah.
But it was fun, and I'm glad you were there. I'm glad that we were there fighting against each other in a way.
Yeah, next time we'll have to team up.
We will, and I mean, our powers combined, you can't stop us, because this is proceeding film. And Drew, today we're talking about one of these specifically was at one point my favorite movie of all time.
Yeah.
It's not, I'm not saying it's down too far from that,
mm-hmm.
but I have shifted a little bit. And I want to do an episode like that one time.
Okay.
Where one week we do your preceding film, where, you know, we do a movie that you really like now versus one you liked when you were like 8.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll do the same for me.
Yeah. It'd be a good one.
That's very close to home.
Yeah.
So mine would be like Space Jam.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Yep.
Okay. Can I say something real quick?
Please.
I watched Little Women, Greta Gerwig's Little Women, for the first time last night. That's one of the best movies I've ever seen in my entire life.
Kate loves that movie.
Oh.
So I need to see it.
Yeah. Tell, as soon as you get the chance, tell Kate that I think it's incredible.
Well, she'll listen to this, so.
she'll hear it pretty soon.
You know what?
Kate! Oh, wasn't it just fantastic? Oh, everything about it. Oh, man, what a movie.
The first one that comes to my mind for, and I'll think more on it, but did you ever see Rookie of the Year?
Yes.
Where that... He, like, hurts his arm.
The kid hurts his arm,
but
and
then he's able
after
to throw,
his surgery.
Like, yeah.
He's throwing, what, like 103, pretty much?
He get pitches in the major leagues. Ugh.
He got his Tommy John out of the way early. He's not like any of these other pitchers that are just blowing their arm out
because
they're throwing heat now.
That is one of those movies that I don't know if I'm able to look at it with an objective lens.
But you're like,
I love it.
That's like me with the Star Wars prequels.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there are people out there that have fair criticisms about those movies. But not me, baby. Watto and Attack of the Clones, love that guy. Oh, man. You know what? I'm even a Jar Jar guy.
Okay.
Kind of. He's really kind of my least favorite character in all of Star Wars. But I digress. Let's talk about The Dark Knight, okay?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, Heath, you said it was your favorite at one point. It was my favorite at one point. I think this movie was probably 25% of the American population's favorite movie.
Oh, people couldn't get enough. People couldn't get enough of this thing.
This thing.
And this is our third Christopher Nolan movie.
Was thinking that on the drive over.
We love Nolan.
We're a Nolan clan.
But at this point, it's weird to say because I remember when this movie came out. This is early Nolan. This is old Nolan at this point.
Mm-hmm.
He took a shift starting at Interstellar, where his movies became more
even grand. Inception.
Even Inception was kind of his first step. This is more of like a, and again, it's a superhero movie, but this is more of a lived in. Nolan movie as opposed to Interstellar. Even Oppenheimer, I think, is a lot larger than life than this stripped down Batman story that we're about to talk about. Did you see Batman Begins? I mean, of course you did.
Right.
But did you have any relation to it before Dark Knight? Because I watched Dark Knight before I watched Batman Begins.
I did too.
And it didn't matter.
What did you think of Batman Begins once you went back and watched it?
It's okay.
Yeah, it's hard to...
It hasn't aged well.
It's hard to compare it. If you watch Dark Knight first and then go to Batman Begins, I think it's hard to be... fully appreciate it than people who watched it in 2005.
Right. I mean, it is interesting how much Nolan has changed in Dark Knight as opposed to the Batman Begins. Like, even the way he presents Gotham is completely different. It's like this... Yeah. I mean, it's Chicago is what it is. And in Batman Begins... He actually got inspiration apparently from Blade Runner. Like he met with the production crew and said, I want it to have this feel that was in Blade Runner. And now that I hear that, I'm like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. A lot of night shots of its eerie glow, the rain. But Dark Knight doesn't do that at all. It's realism.
Yeah.
And it rocks.
We're going to get into it. But I think our biggest challenge is what can we say about the Dark Knight that hasn't already been said. I mean, this is one of those movies that's been discussed every day since it came out in 2008 because it's just that good.
It's arguably the best superhero movie of all time. Is it your favorite superhero movie of all time?
I mean, I have a real, like, I have an intense soft spot for Spider-Man.
The Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, the Tom Holland ones, the Andrew Garfield ones?
I like them all for different reasons. My favorite is probably the first Spider-Man, though. I mean, Willem Dafoe as the Green Goblin is my favorite superhero villain of all time, period. Oh, that's great. Saying something, because we're going to talk about a really good one today.
Really good villain. But yeah, Willem Dafoe kills it in there.
But I mean, this...
Are you in or you out, Spider-Man? Come out to play. I love him in that movie.
He's so good.
He's having fun.
I have no problem, though, saying that I think The Dark Knight is the best quality superhero movie ever made, still.
And I think what's successful about it is, and we'll talk about it more when we talk about Heat,
mm-hmm.
but it's realist.
Yeah.
And it's not a superhero movie. It's really like a crime procedural movie.
Yeah.
It dives more into the politics and how the GCPD is able to operate within this... I mean, it's almost like a military state within Gotham is how they have to operate now that the Joker is basically running loose, running wild. It's a fascinating movie, very very macro, very macro. Like it's a Batman story, but it's Batman's probably what 20% of it.
You know? Right? Yeah, which is a risky move.
Right.
But
it works.
Nolan knew he had something special. I think. Yeah.
Again, I'm sure everybody listening to this has seen The Dark Knight, but I am going to give the plot summary real quick. With the help of allies Lieutenant Jim Gordon and D.A. Harvey Dent, Nolan, and I don't think we've talked about this specifically yet, but he does this great thing of when it's three characters all talking about exposition, he like moves the camera around them and they're always mm-hmm. like in this triangle. Great scene between the three of the guys here.
Yeah.
Where it's a lot of Jim Gordon and Harvey Dent talking and Batman just kind of standing there. It's great. Love it. Batman has been able to keep a tight lid on crime in Gotham City, but when a vile young criminal calling himself the Joker suddenly throws the town into chaos, the Caped Crusader begins to tread a fine line between heroism and vigilantism. Now, I want to start with Heath Ledger's Joker.
Yeah.
Because...
You have to.
I mean, I could see how he could not be your favorite part of the movie. But I think objectively, he's the best part of the movie.
I think so. Yeah, he's got to be. Do you remember the first time that you saw Heath Ledger's Joker?
It was like, I think I was on a commercial on TV, and I think I got scared. I mean, I was 8 years old when this movie came out.
Yeah.
I don't think my mom wanted us to go see it, because he looked freaky. And in hindsight, he really wasn't that bad. But
no, but
he wasn't too disturbing.
I had a similar experience. I didn't see this movie till probably 2013, 2014.
I think I saw it around there. Maybe a couple years earlier. I hadn't seen it in theaters.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't either. And I saw it. Do you remember Watch Mojo on YouTube?
Watch Mojo loves The Dark Knight.
Watch Mojo loves The Dark Knight. And I don't remember what the episode was, but there was a Watch Mojo episode. And they showed a clip of the Joker with the mob, and he's doing the pencil trick.
Yeah.
And it freaked me out. I was like, that's scary.
Ta-da! It's gone.
Because he's so intense.
Right.
I mean, the makeup's kind of creepy.
The makeup's a little freaky.
But it's his performance. That's a psychopath right there.
It's his voice. Like, if you've heard Heath Ledger in anything else, I don't know how he was able to get this voice. They make him so chaotic. And I think what works so well about him, one of the things, obviously, is that he has no backstory. It doesn't matter. Like, you don't know anything about this guy. He's like a dog chasing cars. Yeah. He just doesn't know what he'll do if he just catches one. That's literally his whole thing. He just wants to create chaos. And it's a great Batman villain because of it. Yeah. I think, this is just my opinion, this is an opinion show, so I can say this, of course.
Right. We don't need that disclaimer.
By far the best Joker. Sorry to Jack Nicholson, which is good. I like the Tim Burton 1989 Batman, and he's great in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But this Joker rocks. This guy is sneakily funny, too.
You know,
even though he's a guy called the Joker.
It used to just be Heath Ledger and Jack Nicholson, and then maybe you could tie in Mark Hamill. He's just the voice in the animated ones, but I know a lot of people's Joker. A lot of people love that one.
And he does great, but for me, this is the Joker, and a lot of it is because it is a physical performance, so it's his body on screen.
Yeah. Well, and here's the other question, right, is, like, where does Joaquin Phoenix's Joker fit into this? I mean, I liked that movie.
Third for me, probably. And he won an Oscar for it.
Right, yeah.
Maybe shouldn't have, but...
Yeah.
Joker Folie à Deux coming. You ready? You in?
I heard it's a musical.
That's what they keep saying.
It's a little scary.
Hey, but you got Lady Gaga as Harley Quinn singing.
Right.
I assume she'll be singing. It'd be funny if she's the only one that doesn't sing.
Like, that would it's be a musical.
Bold. I'd be all
like, Lady Gaga, please don't. We don't need you singing.
Yeah, we don't need that voice. It's just Arthur singing.
Yeah, I don't know, man. There's something about Heath Ledger's performance that's... I think going and watching any other Heath Ledger movie or interview and then watching his portrayal, like you said, it's one of the most drastic differences between actor and character. He's a completely different person.
And it's been documented just how much this, I guess, this role he got immersed in, you know?
All I know is he talks, in the interviews he did do about it, he talked about how much he loved playing the Joker. Like,
I mean, I bet it's fun.
Right, yeah.
All you're doing is just causing chaos, being over the top.
I'm sure as an actor, it's so freeing to be like, I can go as over the top as I want to, and...
But you can overdo it. Like, Jared Leto's Joker...
That's true.
...overdid the wackiness.
Right.
He led a fine line of
it's wacky, contained.
But he's also incredibly, like, competent
mm-hmm.
and smart, and you can tell that, like, he actually does think, though, about what he is doing and what he's saying, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even...
Jared Leto's Joker in this universe wouldn't last 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that would be no threat.
Arrest him.
Right, yes.
He's locked up for the rest of his life.
He's lying on the ground with all his guns around him. Just go take him.
I do like the sort of the other side of the coin here. I'm a big Christian Bale Batman fan.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, this is the first iteration of Batman that I had contact with, pretty much, I would say. What do you think about Christian Bale's Batman and his Bruce Wayne?
Yeah, it's good, but is it, we talked about this, is it the focal point of the movie? No.
Not necessarily.
Not really. I think the cool part is that he doesn't have to be. His whole relationship with Morgan Freeman's character is really cool. And of course, Alfred, played by Michael Caine. I think those are the two best relationships we see, which is... That might sound like heresy, considering we have Rachel.
I don't think too many people are big Rachel heads. Although I like Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Yeah. And we can talk about her versus Katie Holmes at some point, probably. But
We'll get to it.
I think I like him better as Bruce Wayne than Batman in this.
Yeah, that's fair. Contrast that with Robert Pattinson, who doesn't know how to play Bruce Wayne, so he's literally just Batman. And it rocks, though. Because he's fully immersed in that Batman character.
Yeah.
But yeah, Christian Bale, I think he's fine as Batman, but there's a lot more Bruce Wayne psychology in these movies.
Yeah.
So, we were saying, though, he's not the focal point of the movie. But I would say you can call it a relationship, I guess, between him and the Joker, though, is a focal point. And we'll talk about this a little bit of Heat, because those two main characters have this sort of mutual respect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, in a way, the Joker and Batman have this mutual respect. I mean, when they're in that interrogation scene, the Joker's like, "You complete me."
Yeah.
"I don't want to kill you." This also allows me to do a Joker voice creepily. Yeah.
Awesome.
But at least it's just you. You won't be scared if I do that, right?
No. Unless you start putting makeup on in the middle of this.
I got my white paint right here and my other stuff.
But
that relationship between the two, his stoicism and his moral code going up against the guy that has no code and chaos, it's a great contrast, and it as the focal point of like the internal conflict that is within Batman, it's fantastic. He's a great foil for Batman, the Joker is.
Well, and there is a lot of respect there because Bruce Wayne knows how clever that the Joker is. Like, he has to take every single threat, like, completely seriously, because he knows that he's smart. Now, he's obviously, like, just a complete psycho, but someone can be a psycho and you can still respect them from a point of, like, we need to be careful with this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, take this guy seriously. And nobody takes him seriously at first.
No, there's even that scene, like, in the vault where Jim Gordon's like, We can tell the Joker was behind this. Like, should we go after him?
The entire mob.
He can wait.
He can wait. Do you like the Batman voice here?
Sometimes I do. Sometimes it's a little overcooked.
Like at the beginning?
No, when he throws the mob guy off the balcony, "Someone knows where he is!" I was like, alright, you're going a little much there.
I used to say, "I'm not wearing hockey pads." So much growing up. Loved that line. I think it works, though, for this character.
It's actually, I think
and it is. And I think it works in this movie.
I think it's toned down from Batman Begins.
He does do it a little
actually,
bit more.
It's not...
Where are the other drugs going? but no, it's great. I'm surprised Christian Bale didn't just destroy his voice in the process. Right? I bet he did.
He probably did.
A lot of tea. But another thing about this movie, and this goes to Nolan being as good as he is, it's so sprawling. When you look at Robert Pattinson's Batman, it's very internal about his struggles and his trying to become the Batman that he needs to be for the Gotham. Here, it's Batman is a part of this society, and we're looking at the Gotham society as a whole through several characters. Even Harvey Dent becomes a third major player in this whole thing, and I think Aaron Eckhart does a great job.
Oh, man,
big fan of Harvey Dent in this movie.
I can't even believe I haven't brought him up yet, because he's a huge part of this movie.
Oh yeah,
both before and after he kind of turns into Two-Face. But before that, the whole point is they're trying to get he's so good as district attorney that they're trying to work with him as much as they can for him to kind of like take over what the Batman's been doing with all his, like,
he's so good in the spotlight at taking down criminals that Batman's like, "Oh, I don't need to be here anymore."
Yeah, which is crazy, right? And then, of course, the Joker recognizes that, and he's like, "Well, I know who my next target is.
I can tear him down." And, I mean, that's goes back to the Joker being smart. He knows that he can tear him down. And this is what I like about Batman. You know what my favorite thing about Batman is?
Tell me.
And you can look at Harvey Dent in this movie kind of as before he turns into Harvey, into Two-Face, as, like, the Superman character, Superman is, like, the golden boy, perfect child, right? And then Batman almost is, like, in the world, people look at him as, like, this wild card, scary guy.
Right.
However, Batman is the one that is able to endure. And there's been comic book stories of Superman where something terrible happens, like if Lois Lane gets killed and he turns bad.
Mm-hmm.
Contrast that with Batman, terrible stuff happens to this guy all the time. He endures.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't break. He doesn't turn bad.
Courtesy of a good pep talk from Alfred, right? Yeah. I think that's his superpower.
He's got his guy in his corner, and it's Alfred. And I mean, the same thing happens in this movie. I mean, even Rachel dies, and one guy, they both love her.
Yeah.
One guy... Granted, half of his face burned off. That'll probably mess you up psychologically. But one guy turns evil, and the other guy keeps enduring because mm-hmm. he's the Batman.
Yeah.
Because he's the hero Gotham deserves, but not the one it needs right now. Dude, we'll hunt him.
When I was like 13, I was like, that's the greatest line that's ever been written in movie
history. I am serious. I had this on Blu-ray,
yeah.
And I would just watch different scenes. I wouldn't. Yeah. I mean, I would watch... the whole movie a lot. Don't get me wrong. Again, I've seen this movie 65,000 times.
Yeah.
But I would just pull up scenes, and every time the ending is on that.
Right.
From the argument where Dent kidnaps Jim Gordon's family. That's where yes. I started.
Yeah.
It's yeah. not about You're what like, I want. Today, it's about what's fair!
You're like, today I'm going to hit the crash party scene. Oh, and yeah. Maybe like the...
You always got to throw in the scene where... Harvey Dent turns himself in, and they're trying to go to the jail.
Yeah,
and the Joker. I mean, that's one of the
through
best,
the tunnel.
One of the best chase scenes in movie. I mean that. Wow.
A couple summers ago, I got stuck in a Chicago tunnel like that, and I was like, "We have to get out of here, guys."
You said, "Oh my goodness, where is he?" I was just gonna say he's got so many guys. Like, where does Joker find his guys?
Yeah, he opens up that semi, and there's just like 12 of them.
Are there just dudes lining up, being like, "Okay, I'll help you out." And they're all crazy?
Yeah, probably.
You got that one guy that Harvey Dent was able to capture after they try to assassinate Jim Gordon at the walk. And he, by the way, faked his death. Don't fake your death and not tell your wife that you faked your death.
Man, one of the many moral lessons that The Dark Knight teaches us.
Harvey Dent takes that guy and he's gonna act like he's going to shoot him based on the heads or tails. Fun fact, it's a two-sided headed coin. Is that how you would say that? Two-sided headed coin? Heads or tails? It's both heads. You know what I mean. There you
go. Yeah.
You know what I mean. Anyway, apparently that guy is crazy, according to Batman. Batman was able to do his research on that guy. Remember that scene? He's like, let's go again, and Harvey Dent flips the... I'm going way off base right now, but I'm tracking. So Harvey Dent kidnaps that one guy who plays Polka Dot yes. Man in the Suicide Squad. David Dalmastian, yes. or whatever he's his name in, is. He's an Oppenheimer.
And he's got Late Night with the Devil coming out.
Late Night
out.
With the Devil. I haven't seen it. But anyway, so he throws the... And then Batman catches it. And he was like, you're going to leave a life's man up to chance? He's like, well, not exactly. And then he's like, well, he's got schizophrenia.
Yeah, he's a paranoid schizophrenia.
kind of scum that the Joker attracts. Great stuff.
We're jumping around so much, and it's because we know the movie so well that we're just, in our mind, able to go like, oh, and then this and that one point does this.
right on. And you know what? Oh, man. I do want to talk about, though, just because we have time.
Yeah, we have time.
Michael Caine's Alfred. I love Michael Caine's so Alfred. Good. You're right. He gives him the pep talk. He has the right words for everything.
Mm-hmm.
Although, did he do right by burning that letter that Rachel wrote saying that she's in love with Harvey Dent?
I guess that's a Dark Knight Rises question.
Soon. We'll do it soon. Looking forward to it. But yeah, Michael Caine is great in these movies. Love him.
He's so good. It feels like he was born to play Alfred. And he's one of those that, after his performance, you're like, it's really hard for me to imagine someone doing Alfred as good as him. And so he kind of just cursed all other future Alfreds by playing it so well. I thought the same thing about the Joker, and I actually think that theory holds up, because as good as Joaquin Phoenix was, I was like, well, he's no Heath Ledger. You have so many great performances by these iconic characters, and you're like, I don't know how they're going to top it. I don't know how you could top Aaron Eckhart as Harvey Dent either. I mean, Nolan was so...
Bro, give Tommy Lee Jones some love, is... his run is Harvey Dent. Crazy. What do you think about Nolan's decision to make Gotham pretty much just a real place, pretty much just Chicago?
Well, it's really good, and I think we'll talk about it with Heat as well. I think that's where Nolan actually got a lot of inspiration for the way that he shoots and portrays Gotham like a real city, because in Heat, it's L.A. It's something that you don't see in comic book movies very often, where you're like, well, this is like a real city. Like, I could actually live here.
Yeah, it's not fantastical at all.
And it puts the stakes on so much of a... The stakes are so much higher because you're like, wait, this is, like, actually within my world.
Yeah.
Like, this... Like, the ferry scene,
mm-hmm.
when it's the two different boats, and they're trying to, you know, and the Joker's like...
And here
one of them has
go.
To blow up the other one, otherwise I'll blow them both up. That felt like... Like Captain Phillips level, like, oh my gosh, like, this is a real situation. It was so thrilling on a level that you don't get in a comic book movie when it just happens in, if it happens in some world that you're like, well, it's in a comic book.
Hey, shout out to the people of Gotham for not blowing each other up.
And the prisoners of Gotham.
Yeah. That guy.
Hey, there's still people. Sorry.
That was
a little off.
You're good. Okay, so I was talking about how Batman never breaks, and he never turns bad, obviously. But does he break some of his morals? And what I think about is they're trying to stop the Joker at all costs. And so he uses that technology to basically gain information and have access to everybody's cell phone so he can spy on literally everybody just to find out where the Joker is. Do you think that's a little bit of Batman losing his morality slightly? Like at all costs to fight the evil?
I think there's an argument there. I mean...
And is that good?
Lucius Fox, who's the guy who he's having help him with that, he's like, well, I'll help you, but when it's over, I'm going to resign because...
At the end, type in your name.
So good. So clearly there's some you're stepping over a line of morality there. But is the bigger argument that he essentially kills Harvey Dent at the end of the movie?
Yeah. No, he was trying to hold him, right? His hand slipped. He had a bad ACL at that point, right?
he like linebacker tackled him off of a 10-story building.
That's true. He did do that. But he was about to kill that kid.
Right. He was about to kill exactly. that kid. Exactly. But that's the thing, right? Like,
this movie tears Batman
was
down.
Was his morality...
His code is not to kill.
Was it even achievable? Right?
That's a good question.
The Joker was like, well, you have this stupid moral
Tonight
system.
You're gonna break your
Yeah. I'm gonna be able to break it. And he kinda does.
Dude, that interrogation scene is insane.
It's so good.
Oh, man. Oh, this movie rocks.
It's so
good. and I'm going to be honest with you, before we decided to do this, it had been a while since I had seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wait, this still rocks.
I mean, like, quick shout out to Hans Zimmer for one of the best scores ever made.
Yeah, dude.
I mean, talk
Brought
about...
Batman to modern age.
A gritty, real, like, Streets of Chicago type of score.
I mean, this whole movie is just gritty, real. Like Heat.
It really is like we've seen movies try to do the gritty, real, dark type of film.
This movie is what they're trying to base
this
off
is
of.
Yeah, this is the gold standard. And a lot of them fall short because you end up getting a little too... You're like, okay, that's kind of over the line.
Right.
I think this one does a great job of, like, this could really happen. We're not going to just waterboard you with depressing, like, oh, that's real life, so you have to see this happen.
Right.
It's grounded in realism, but it's still super entertaining.
Yeah. We could talk about 45 different MVPs.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to go, because, yes, Joker's incredible. Heath Ledger won an Oscar for this role. I'm just going to go with the ensemble performance as a whole. Christian Bale's obviously great. Aaron Eckhart's great.
Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman's great.
Fantastic.
Here's my thing, too. I think this movie is better with Maggie Gyllenhaal as Rachel than if it was Katie Holmes as Rachel.
Oh, yeah?
She fits in this one, and Katie Holmes fits in Batman Begins.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Do you know, was it Katie Holmes was like, I don't want to do it,
and then they had to recast? Conflicts? Yeah, I'm not too sure.
Or was it like, we don't think Katie Holmes would be good for this, we're going to recast?
I'm not actually too sure on that.
I'm not either.
But Maggie Gyllenhaal, but right. I thought, was better for this movie. Except for one scene, I'll bring that up here in a bit. Tell me your MVP, though.
My hands are up, Heath, because I don't know how I could possibly pin this on
45 MVP.
I mean, why don't I just say Nolan, right?
Yeah,
like, the guy who's in charge of the whole thing?
Yeah. Do it.
But I really, I mean...
Not Cillian Murphy as Scarecrow?
No. He's in his... You don't even see... Well, actually, you do see his face.
You do?
He, like, pulls the mask off after he's caught him. That's it.
You get those Batman imposter, like, hey, you need help! And he's like, not my diagnosis. Little Scarecrow joke, because he's a doctor.
I mean, you have to say that Heath Ledger...
If it's everybody pulling the string, if it's the guy pulling the strings of everything, then sure, Nolan.
Right, I think it is. Ledger gives a generational performance.
Oh, yeah.
And we can't understate that. The guy who's pulling all the strings and then puts the whole thing together has to get probably the best credit. Because it's a complete movie. And honestly, after watching Oppenheimer and seeing how complete of a movie that was, I was like, oh, I shouldn't have even been surprised, right?
Yeah. He's been doing this for years.
Has Nolan had a dud? Really?
Listen, we were early on the Tenet hive, but people were down on Tenet when it first came out. Because they're frauds and they're dummies. They don't know real art.
Right.
Golly, what a film.
Have you seen Insomnia?
Yes. It's good.
I liked Insomnia. It's
early
it's
Nolan.
It's more of his Batman Begins
I mean, he's
era.
Just trying to get his feet wet.
Yeah.
Which okay, is, you could say that those early movies are not as good as what he started to cook here.
Sans Memento, which is, yeah, I think, really good. And honestly,
the
wow,
Prestige
the
rocks,
Prestige
too.
Is really good. I mean, really good.
The Prestige is awesome.
That is my favorite Hugh Jackman performance.
That's a good one.
That, and then Prisoners is like just a half a step below that.
Dude, he's terrifying in Prisoners.
All of my so greatest showmen people are probably shouting at the screen right now, but I'm sorry.
I'm a Logan head. He did really good in Logan.
I haven't seen Logan.
We'll do it at some point.
Well, I feel like I should see all the X-Mans before that.
Oh,
right?
You definitely should, yeah.
So I got a ways to go.
Yeah, you got a ways to go. Here's my criticism.
Yeah.
I think Maggie Gyllenhaal is great in this movie, but she has one line delivery that I've never forgotten about ever since she said it.
I thought you were going to say you've never forgiven her.
I've never forgiven her either. So, Harvey Dent is prosecuting some mob henchman guy who somehow is able to pull a gun in there, probably because the judge is corrupt. Anyway, it's a non-American gun, so it doesn't go off. Nice little American-made reference when he's like, if you want to kill a public service Maroney, I recommend you buy American. Anyway, afterwards, him and him and Rachel, who now have a little thing going on, are talking. He's like, I'm okay. And she's like, oh, well, listen, you're Gotham's DA. If you're not getting shot at, you're not doing your job right. And I'm going to be honest with you, I've never stopped thinking about that. Not in a good way, in a bad way. Because what are we doing with that line delivery, Maggie? Come on. And then she's like, if you say you're feeling rattled, we can take the rest of the day off. Terrible stuff from an otherwise really good movie. Am I right?
I mean, I've never had a problem with this.
Just me? Okay. Thought it was weird. I didn't know what she was doing there. I know what she was doing, but it didn't work for me.
So I'm going to ask you this, because I think...
Sorry, Maggie.
You know this movie as front to back to front as I do.
Yeah.
Maybe more. So I'm going to pull out a very specific question.
Okay.
And I need you to help me answer this.
Right.
Interrogation scene happens, right?
Yeah.
And Batman has the Joker in his hands, and he goes, don't worry, I'm going to tell you where they are. Because he's taken Rachel and Harvey Dent and put them in separate locations.
Don't worry!
And he says...
she's at one place.
She's at one place, and Harvey Dent's at the other. Batman gets out of the room, and Gordon's like, which one are you going after? And he says, I'm going after Rachel. But, so, I think, did the Joker tell him the wrong locations?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure the Joker told him the wrong locations.
He said...
Because the Joker knows who Batman is.
Yeah, and he knows who he's going to go after.
Right. He's like, you know, I really thought you were dead. Well, you threw yourself after her.
Look at you go.
Oh, man. Dude, but that scene rocks.
Because the
when
first...
he puts the when he basically shuts the door with that chair so nobody can get in, he just starts punching the crap out of the Joker. He starts laughing. Oh my goodness. What a movie.
Because the first time, and probably, I mean, the first few times I watched that, I was like, they got the addresses wrong. That's a mistake. But then I think at a certain point, I was like, he was on purpose.
That's how smart the Joker is.
Wow.
Nolan doesn't get things like that.
That's good writing, Heath.
That's great writing. Do you have a criticism?
Did I write one down? Let me check. Oh, I wrote Coleman Reese is a pretty weak character.
Coleman Reese. Is that... Which one was Coleman Reese?
He's the lawyer who's working for Wayne Enterprises.
Oh, yeah. And he goes on TV show. And he's like, I know who the Batman is. And
then, and then the Joker's like,
Joker's like, let's stop this crap. I'm going to call in and tell this guy I'm going to kill him if he says that. Anybody that is around Coleman Reese, kill him or else I'm going to blow up a hospital.
Yeah.
And then he's like, I'll just shut up now.
I don't think he added anything.
No, we didn't need that guy.
We didn't need him, right?
It was just kind of dumb.
Yeah.
You're right. That's a good point.
That's one hole that I thought of.
Yeah, he really served no purpose except that I just hated that guy.
I mean, he like...
Although Bruce Wayne sacrifices his car and almost his life to save that guy.
Right. Which, again, I don't even know if that guy deserved that, but whatever.
Can I say this? The people of Gotham are idiots for not... thinking that Bruce Wayne is Batman.
Yeah.
I mean...
Surely someone at one point was like, how about the extremely rich guy who lives here?
Boy, where'd he get all those toys? I don't know. Yeah. Maybe the guy that makes everything and we barely see, and he disappeared for 7 years, and when he came back, a guy in a bat costume started fighting crime.
Right.
Maybe.
I feel like you could have put it together.
I don't see how Jim Gordon ever does it. I love in The Dark Knight Rises when he finally tells him who he is. He's like, Bruce Wayne? What?
Like, he's the last person he could have ever
Never would have guessed that. Same height, build, mysterious. Huh. Never would have thought
I've never seen them both in the same place at once, even though they're arguably the two most powerful people in Gotham.
Yeah. Favorite scene. We both didn't write one specific scene.
It's hard, man.
Because there's five or six set pieces that you're like, oh, this is incredible. I mean, the opening heist, which is straight out of Heat, by the way.
Yeah.
That's a perfect villain intro.
It's incredible.
I love when Harvey Dent turns himself in and they're trying to take him to the police station and the Joker intercepts the
Such a good police chase vehicle. Scene. I mean...
The interrogation scene where Joker and Batman finally talk to each other.
I really like when Joker crashes the party and he's telling the story about how he got his scars to Rachel. I mean, it's...
We had no money for surgeries.
It's really good.
It's freaky, too.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, and then I love the end. Nolan knows how to end a movie. And with the Hans Zimmer score... And we get into the mythos of Batman and his whole thing about how he's the hero Gotham deserves, but not the one it needs right now, so we'll hunt him, and then it's dun-dun-dun-dun.
I mean, we got robbed, Heath, that we weren't able to see that in theaters.
Oh, you're right.
Like,
if I was here now, I would appreciate that so much. Oh, man.
I can't imagine experiencing all of that in a theater, like... Having no idea going in, you're hoping it's good, and you think, well, Batman Begin was good, so I'm sure it'll be good, and we know the Joker's coming. But to have that hit you in a theater, man.
I hope they're, and I bet they are out there, the guy that went in there and walked out and said, man, that was like Heat.
Said, you know what that movie reminded me of?
Michael Mann's Heat. You ready to get into that convo?
Please.
Oh, man. So, Michael Mann, first off, I want to talk about him for a second. I become him, and we're going to call him, these fans of Michael Mann, we're going to call him Maniacs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, he directed, I think, a lot of Miami Vice TV show and the movie. Ended up directing the movie. Directed for Ferrari, which came out last year.
Directed the Adam Last Driver one?
Yes, the Adam Driver one. Collateral.
Mm-hmm.
And then my favorite of his, which is... 1992's masterpiece. Excuse me, 1995 masterpiece, Heat. Oh, I'm going to read the synopsis of Heat, and then I want to know what your relationship is to this. I'm assuming it's the first time you saw it.
It is.
Right on. Master criminal Neil McCauley, played by Robert De Niro, ever heard of him? Is trying to control the rogue actions of one of his men while also planning one last big heist before retiring. Meanwhile, Lieutenant Hanna, Al Pacino, attempts to track down McCauley as he deals with the chaos in his own life, including the infidelity of his wife and the mental health of his stepdaughter. McCauley and Hanna discover a mutual respect even as they try to thwart each other's plans. What are we thinking of Heat?
I liked it.
Yeah. It's one of those movies, right, where you watch it, you're like, that was kind of cool.
This is the second Michael Mann I've seen. I saw Collateral.
I still haven't seen Collateral.
It was pretty good, I'd say. I liked Heat better.
Yeah.
It's impressive, though, right? Like, you would think he must have had such high respect in the industry because, and you have this written down, Heath, so I'm going to steal your thunder.
Please do.
This is the first time that De Niro and Pacino were together.
Right.
On a film. Like,
they were in The Godfather Part 2, but since...
Never shared a scene together.
Since De Niro was all flashback, they never shared the screen together.
Mm-hmm.
So this is their first time in scenes together. Which, I'm assuming in 1995 was, like, the biggest deal in movies.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I mean, because those are the two guys that were coming up. I mean, those are the two movie stars of
the 20th century. Well, and by 95, they were both... absolute legends.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know what our comparison would be with today's actors. I mean, Tom Cruise, maybe.
Probably be Tom Cruise and, like, Ben Affleck. No. Yeah.
Tom Hanks?
It'd probably be like, well...
Has Tom Cruise and Tom Hanks ever been in anything together?
That could be it. You almost got it, but it didn't seem that huge in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood with Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio. That, I think, is the closest we've gotten to this.
Did they never share a scene together in that? They did,
no,
right?
They did.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, like, them being on... That was the first time they were ever on screen together was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and those two guys came up through this century of, like, they were the two
they
guys.
They had never been in a movie together?
Never been in a movie together.
Well, that's...
That might be it.
That's probably it, yeah.
That's probably it. But, dude, Heat rocks.
Yeah.
It's a dude's movie.
It is.
Put Lost in Translation and her to bed, you know?
This is...
This one is for the dudes.
This is, like, city, crime, just...
This crew's good. Cops doing cop things. But when you look at the psychology of these two groups, more similar than they are different, in my opinion.
I want to ask you this.
Yeah.
Which performance did you like better, De Niro or Pacino?
Okay. I thought De Niro is probably better, but Pacino is doing some insane stuff here. When he's got Hank Azaria, and he's like, she's got a great ass! And your head's all the way up! And he's talking to the other guy, he's like, give me all you got! Give me all you got! What is he doing in this movie, dude? He's playing every scene like he just snorted a line of cocaine.
Yeah.
I love it when he walks in on his wife, third wife, by the way, because he can't put his family before his obsession of being a cop, catches them in the act of cheating. He's like, well, you can sleep with my wife, but you can't watch my television. Give me all you got. What is he doing in this movie? It's great. I love it. It's wild stuff, right?
Yeah, it is. And Pacino is in prime Pacino form in this movie.
I mean, because Pacino in The Godfather, you know, he's kind of soft-spoken, you know, like this. And then here, he's just all of a sudden, she's got a great ass!
This is kind
of
like Scarface, but like...
I guess Scarface was when he turned
he's
into...
He's more so on like...
Loud guy.
He's on the good side in this movie.
But nuts.
He's nuts.
You could get whacked walking your doggy.
I mean, I bet Michael Mann was just like, just go as extreme as possible. And he's like, all right.
Which one did you like better?
I like Pacino better. I do. He's more fun to watch for me in this
one. He's so fun on screen. De Niro's just like that tough, don't talk to me kind of guy. You know what I mean?
Right. Which he's played a lot.
And this relationship between the two actors and the two characters, that is the emotional connection that we have in this movie, is their mutual respect for one another as a criminal and as the guy trying to chase this criminal.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing about Neil. He's a bad guy, but he's not an evil guy. What do you think? I mean, even in the so even when the heist goes wrong in the beginning, and is that Wangro? Is that his name?
Yeah, Wangro.
Guy's insane.
Yeah,
ends up shooting those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Neil doesn't want to do that.
Right,
he's not trying to kill anybody. But then he has to.
Yeah, he has a very broken moral compass. But you're right, he's not evil.
Right. Do you see the Batman and Joker relationship as sort of a funhouse mirror version of the Neil and Vincent relationship in Heat? Sort of these two guys are on opposite ends of the legal code and this mutual respect for one another?
Yeah, they're very different relationships.
Right.
But you are right from a story standpoint where it's, yeah, you've got two sides of the coin who both have to respect each other because they're both exceptional at what they do.
Right.
You know, whether it's like catching criminals or just causing the absolute most chaos. Like,
Neil's going to do what he can to get out of there, but just know, Vincent, he's not going to be happy about it, but he will kill you.
Yeah.
If there's some poor guy who can't get back to his family on the other end of the barrel.
And you're right. I and especially with the, if you take the interrogation scene from The Dark Knight and then you take the coffee shop scene in Heat, I think those are very similar,
right,
in like both how they shoot it.
Yeah.
And kind of like, what is this providing for the story?
Right.
Like, we need these two characters who, for most of the movie, are doing things on their own, and they're connected, but they're not actually face-to-face, and then they have one face-to-face encounter. And so it's like everything comes to a head.
Yeah. And boy, did they deliver.
And they're both amazing scenes.
The way they look at each other, you know, they're like, I like this guy.
Which, I love that. Like, in anything. Like, I'm a huge sports fan. You know this.
Uh-huh.
We had a sports show for 4 years.
Good stuff.
I love when you go through a whole, whether it's a whole season, or like, I mean, the Masters was just on for the entirety of a tournament. When you have two teams or two players who are vastly better than everyone else in the field, you're like, I just want those two to meet and just kind of watch the fireworks happen. Like, I love that stuff. And so in this movie, in either of these movies, you've got these two extremely strong and intense characters, and you're just like, I just want to get these two in a room and get them talking.
We finally
and it gives it to you.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
I think the pacing of this movie is very similar to The Dark Knight, too. You know, you start with that opening heist, and then you have a few more, like, action set pieces. You know, I can think the botched bank robbery scene is a lot like the, just in how it's paced, like the Joker scene where he intercepts the truck that's taken Harvey Dent to prison, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just the way that builds up to where you, it's slow at first, but you know something bad is about to happen and stuff is about to get crazy.
Right.
It's just, it's paced similar. And then, like, there's just a lot of interlays of people talking and, like, those interpersonal conflicts in both movies. I think there's more of that in Heat.
Yeah.
It's a lot of men talking to their wives or girlfriends about how they are compelled to keep doing the thing that they want to do. And the wife or girlfriend is like, well, just stop. And he's like, I can't. I mean, even Neil and Vince, they talk about that. I can't do anything else. Neil can't stop being a bank robber for some reason and working for John Voight with one of the craziest haircuts I've ever seen from a guy. It's great stuff.
But there's for sure one shared cast member between these two movies.
Yeah, it's the, I cannot remember his name in here, but I'm going to look it up for you because we have that technology. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Hold on. We're almost there. William Fichtner.
Yeah.
He plays Roger, he's Van Zandt in here, which is like the bad mob guy that ends up trying to kill Neil and his gang.
Yeah.
Thanks to Wangro. That guy's a psychopath.
Wangro's crazy.
Wangro's nuts. Wangro's just killing people. Just
the guy who plays him, though, I want to give huge kudos to him because he's scary, and it's just his performance. The scene.
We all know guys like Wangro. Not that psychotic, but like we know guys like Wangro. Hey man, I had to do it. You did.
The scariest scene in either of these movies that I've seen was when Wangro has a
when he kills the prostitute.
He sleeps with the and then she's like talking about him, and she's like, "Oh, you're a hot dog," and he's like, "You don't get it." I was like, I'm frightened right now.
That was scary. Yeah, I didn't like that at all. He's
got kind of like a smile on his face. Ugh.
Yeah, Wayne Gross is a psychopath. I don't know why he did that. We're just dealing with a wild card here, I guess.
Yeah.
Who, thank goodness, Neil ends up killing.
Phew.
But pretty much sacrificed himself to go kill that guy.
Yeah.
R.I.P. to Danny Trejo, by the way. Man, they got to him. They got to his girl, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the bank robbery scene. This movie's kind of hard to talk about because it's so sprawling.
Yeah.
But if you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. But even like the way the police states work in both movies, I think is similar too.
Yeah.
It's this all-out war versus a villain. They have to bend the rules a little bit to get to that villain.
Is Trejo he's one of the cops?
No, Danny Trejo is a part of Neil's crew.
Okay.
So you got...
Which one was Trejo?
Let me tell you the crew. Let me tell you Neil's crew here for a second. Chris Chehalis? I can't remember how you say his last name. Val Kilmer's character.
Right.
Started off with long hair. Gets shot after the botched robbery. Comes out with short hair.
Yeah, then he's Iceman.
Then he's Iceman, yeah. You've got Tom Sizemore as Michael. For him, the action is the juice. Great Tom Sizemore role here. You've got Danny Trejo as Trejo, and then at the beginning, Wayne Grow is a part of that crew.
Okay, so he's just the other guy.
He's just the other guy who then turns on them.
So who does Ted Levine, what's his character's name?
Oh, Bosco.
Bosco.
R.I.P. to Bosco. R.I.P. He's one of the cops.
And I got to ask you this.
And Detective Cassells, who was in Last of the Mohicans, Wes Studi, might be who you're thinking of.
Okay. No, but I...
Because he's in the police. He's part of the police.
Yes. I gotta ask you this. Yes. Do you think that Ted Levine, as Bosco in this, got him Stottlemyre in Monk?
He has the same cadence.
It's probably the same character.
Yeah. I totally get it. I'm all aboard on that.
I mean, he came on, and I was like, wait, Stottlemyre's in this? And he's the same guy.
Ashley Judd's in this movie. You big Ashley Judd guy at all? Seen Double Jeopardy? Good movie.
No, I haven't seen it.
The only reason I want to bring up Ashley Judd is because she's a huge Kentucky basketball fan. Oh. You think she was talking like Michael Mann about Rick Pitino in this movie, when they were filming this movie? She's like, man, Rick Pitino's got this team looking pretty good because they won the 95 championship. I looked this up.
Oh, wow.
I think. No, I might be.
Oh, because Arkansas won 94, right?
No, wait a second. Hold on. When did Rick Pitino? You know what? This doesn't even matter. They won somewhere around there. I just know she was probably all in on
Rick Pitino. Is she Chris's wife?
Yeah, she's Chris's wife. Very pretty, I'll say it. Chris needed to calm down a little bit.
Yeah, and he's got a kid, too. Come on, man.
He got a little too angry with her. And then she was hanging out with Hank Azaria, and he was hanging out with her. You know why?
Why?
Because she's got a great ass! And your head's all the way up it! Golly, I can't stop thinking about that. What a crazy thing to say.
It felt unscripted. It really did. Yeah.
Pacino said, I got a good one.
Wait for this.
I got a good one, Michael. No, you're going to like this. I swear. His wife, what do you think?
I guess, as a character?
Yeah, as a character.
Yeah, it was a little bit confusing to me, her role with the daughter. Like, I wanted that piece of the movie to be bigger, especially when you know where it's going, and that very heartbreaking scene when he finds her in the bathtub.
Hey, he's the father that stepped up, by the way.
I feel like I didn't get enough of that dynamic.
You're right.
Before that happened. Like, you get a couple scenes, but it's really not fleshed out. I mean, the movie's almost 3 hours. I don't really know where else you could have fit it in. I mean, in today's standards, you could have probably made this like a 10-episode series and really fleshed out some other aspects.
We don't need that, though.
But this was 1995.
I need a 3-hour movie directed by Michael Mann is what I need. No, you bring up a good point because he talks a lot about how his stepdaughter is like messed up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And his relationship with his wife is very hindered because of his work and how he's always consumed with catching the bad guys. But, and especially when it relates to Natalie Portman's character, you don't see it as much. I mean, she has that freak out about she can't find her beret or whatever at the beginning, and then her dad doesn't even show up because that guy sucks. You don't really see much of her freaking out between there and when she then ends up trying to kill herself.
I mean, yeah, he finds her at a bus stop at one point.
Right.
And takes her home. But, I yeah, they're just...
Because in a movie that seems really big on that idea of men being compelled to do things that destroy them and the people they love, you probably could have fleshed that out just a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's the theme of the movie.
It is. I mean, that whole conversation between Pacino... hold on. I was going to go with actors.
You're good.
Between Vincent. Neil and Vincent.
Yeah.
There's an aspect there of, like, you know, I got a family and, right. You know, but I can't stop doing this. And so it is a central theme of the movie. And we do get, I think we get more of it with Vincent and his wife, but not as much with the daughter, which surprises me because I read that synopsis before I watched it that you just read.
Yeah.
And it mentions the daughter as, like, a central part of the movie. And she's really not. She's kind of just... another aspect that's on the side.
He mentions it, but like it doesn't seem
we don't see a lot of it, which is funny because it's Natalie Portman. Like
it was early Natalie Portman. She wasn't like the distinguished actress teenager. That she is now.
Yeah,
but good role for Natalie Portman.
Have you seen Leon the Professional?
Never seen it.
She's good in that. She's real young in that one.
But is that a good movie? Is it fun?
It is. Yeah. Okay. It's kind of like a Jason Bourne, but if Jason Bourne was bringing a kid around with him.
We'll put it on the list.
Sure. I'll put it on with Bourne.
Okay.
Actually, well, I should probably make sure that there's actually some influence between the two of them.
We'll figure it out. Real quick tangent for you. The lady that played Edie, who was De Niro's love interest, she might have, and I haven't done any sort of research about this, but her southern accent said it's so bad. Right? Or am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right.
Again, I could look this up and it be that she's she's completely from Georgia.
I'm glad you said it because I was like, bad that accent. Sounds fake.
It was a bad accent.
Maybe it's just...
Why did she come out to LA to do graphic design?
But didn't she come from New York?
No, she came from
the South.
I swear it was like West Virginia or something, like the mountains. Bad accent.
It was bad. Here's the thing,
though. I didn't necessarily believe their love for each other.
I think we have a good ear for southern accents.
Yeah, that's fair.
Having grown up here in the South.
Yeah. Just some nitpicks here or there, you know?
Hey,
for an otherwise pretty good movie, I would say.
It is a good movie. It's long. It is. It's another...
So is The Dark Knight, though, you know?
But come on.
But it's paced like it.
I'd watch 5 hours of The Dark Knight.
It's the same pacing. It's the same pacing.
I just don't think the story's quite as compelling. But, I mean,
it's fair.
The Dark Knight, you know.
It's The Dark Knight.
Most stories aren't as compelling.
Do you think it's a payoff that Vincent kills and, like, shoots Neil in the end?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it needed to be that, actually.
I think
otherwise,
right.
I think I would have been pretty disappointed. I mean, I guess if it was the other way around, I'd still feel some sort of resolution. But I think that's the way it should have ended.
Right. I mean, he had to go back to kill Wangro, and that's what... Yeah, the payoff to that is he gets captured, he gets killed.
Right. But
then they hold each other's hand as he dies.
I wasn't a huge
mutual
fan of that.
Respect.
I was like, no, they're not friends.
No, I'm telling you, he was going to be sad if he had to pop him. You know? And who was the other... Who was the poor... What did he say? He's like, if there's a poor bastard on the other end of that barrel, I'm going to shoot you. It was him.
Yeah.
He basically like
classic example of foreshadowing.
Yeah, it's great.
If you're in sixth grade English, write this down for your
Michael
foreshadowing
Mann's
example.
Heat. That's right. That's right.
Got some rising action. Remember that?
Yeah, dude. I know exactly what you're talking about. All right, let's do some awards real quick.
Okay.
MVP.
Yeah, go for it.
Dude's Rock. I've said it a few times. I've talked about Tombstone, I've talked about Warrior as masculine melodramas. Add heat to the freaking list, okay? Dudes rock in this movie. And sometimes it's a sad dudes rock. Rip Tom Sizemore.
Mm-hmm.
Rip Ted Levine.
Yeah.
For them, the action was the juice, and it ended up killing them. But dudes rock. What's your MVP?
So, I loved the way this movie looked. And Nolan talks a lot about drawing inspiration from Heat from a visual standpoint.
Yeah, like you can see it.
How do you shoot a city that's as big as LA, which I think Gotham's supposed to be massive, like 20 million people or something huge. Crazy. And he, like, you get such a sense of the size of LA and also, like, the grime, the, you know, the dirty kind of parts of it.
There's a realism, but there's also a sick, like, a cool neon-soaked style almost to it.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel like it's exaggerated for movie's sake.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. That's a good point.
So I really like it. So I looked up the cinematographer. His name is Dante Spinotti.
Yeah, dude.
Great name.
Whoa.
So I want to give him a shout-out. And I looked up his filmography, Heath, and he's got some notables on there. You told me you watched The Last of the Mohicans.
Oh, great movie.
He was a cinematographer for that one.
And that movie looks like a painting, which is it's different than this.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy, Dante Spinotti's got it. Him and Mann hanging out.
I mean, he also shot one of my favorites. You ever seen Tower Heist?
Yeah, dude.
I love Tower Heist.
He shot Tower Heist?
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
That's a Ben Stiller classic right there.
I would love to talk funny about movie. That movie.
Funny movie. Oh, we'll talk
we
about it.
We could do it as Thanksgiving special.
That'd be great. Looking forward to it. But so, Dante Spinotti.
Way to go, Spinotti.
Yeah, this movie looks fantastic.
It's really good.
There's just so many, like, just incredible shots.
Collateral's also in L.A. Uh-huh. Spinotti did not shoot that one. Guess what, Heath?
Doesn't look as good.
Nope.
Gotta get Spinotti in on this stuff. And Tower Heist. Golly. Looks a little different than Tower Heist, I'm going to be honest with you.
It does. Which is kind of cool, right?
Fun movie, though.
He can do... Not every one of his movies looks the same.
That's fair. Let's do criticism. Again, he's fun to watch, but Pacino is doing some just crazy things in this movie. Like, he does this point a lot where, like, he's like, be there! When he's talking to that one guy because he's trying to get info about Neil's crew, he's like, you better be there tonight! He just keeps pointing at him, you know? And he does it later. It's the same point. Oh, man.
He's a little cartoony.
He's very cartoony. It's so fun to watch.
Yeah.
Shout out to our guy, Al. He's just having fun.
I think that's fair, though. There's more than a couple scenes where you're like, okay.
Calm down. But yours has to do with De Niro.
Yeah.
Your criticism.
And I'm interested to hear what you think. I don't know if I completely... Neil McCauley is set up as, like, the most, like, badass, like, L.A. guy you're ever going to meet. And I don't know if I completely buy it when De Niro's playing him. Some scenes more than others.
This crew's good.
I don't know, man. Especially, I also don't buy his relationship with Edie at all.
Yeah, I don't buy it.
De Niro's not good at playing, like, the James Bond, like, I'm doing my action stuff over here, and I'm a lady killer over here.
Yeah. But she was lonely, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And, like, I could understand if, like, Robert De Niro came up to some lady, and she'd be like, all right, yeah, let's... I'm here for it, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. We were just spoiled with Christian Bale in Dark Knight, so I was like, that's not as good.
I mean, that guy's got Russian ballet dancers
right.
all over him, you know?
I understand. Do you think, like, that Robert De Niro is this Neil guy who's like...
Yeah, I thought he was pretty menacing and, like, you clearly did not want to mess with him, although he let Wangro get away somehow at the very beginning.
I mean, he kind of, like, beat him up in the diner booth, which I enjoyed that scene.
Hit his head against the table. That one guy's looking. Tom Sizemore just looks at the guy, and the guy looks away. He's like, I don't want any part of this.
That's what I would have done. I'm just eating my meal.
And then, you know why? Because Neil McCauley is that dude. But I don't know how Wangro got away in that parking lot.
No.
I know there was a cop there, and they were looking for him, but how did he get out of there? Literally, he was, like, at the foot. He was at the foot of De Niro.
He looks up, and he's just gone.
How did Wangro escape? But I think I'd buy it.
Okay.
I'd buy it. They do enough smart, competent things to where you go, these guys are good at what they're doing.
Right.
Even Vincent's like, this crew's good and you see Neil up there taking photographs of him from very far away.
I totally buy
I think the competence helps you to realize that he's menacing.
I buy that he's good. The smart aspect of it. I mean, I think it's maybe just the physical part of it.
I love like when watching De Niro run.
I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they're both of these guys are what?
They're
late 40s, yeah, early 50s in this movie.
They're pretty old.
The part that I thought was funny was when, you know, he was in the hotel, the hallway there towards the end, and that one police officer has his gun on him from the back, and De Niro literally just takes two steps back.
Yeah, hits him with the flashlight.
That guy doesn't do it. Worst cop ever.
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, you're like, whoa, he is pretty menacing. If he can do that crap. But no, I think that's a fair criticism.
It's a personal one.
It's, yeah.
It's not like anything that's really bad with the movie. I just, for part of it, I was like, I don't know.
So, favorite scene, I said it's got to be the botched bank robbery. And this is where Val Kilmer steals the show.
Yeah,
that apparently, shootout. Yeah, the shootout. And so the way he operates and shoots and reloads his gun, apparently they show Marines this movie in how to actively reload weapons in a live gunfight.
Wow.
So Val Kilmer...
That's impressive.
Val Kilmer did his research. And it's a cool scene. It's very sad. It really is sort of the turning point of the movie where everything goes south and Neil and his crew just have to escape pretty much.
Yeah.
But it's intense, dude.
Even the bank robbery leading up to
the sound design is incredible.
Really good. Really good.
It's a cool scene. What's yours?
Mine's the... it's when Vincent and Neil meet in the coffee shop. I think it's super well done.
Perfectly acted, perfectly written.
And it's, again, like, not only was it building up in the movie where you're, like, in anticipation for these two guys meeting, it's also Pacino and De Niro getting a scene together.
I mean, like, they knew the importance of... Everybody that was working on this movie knew the importance of that scene.
Yeah.
For not just the movie's purposes, but the meta text that it was a part of.
And it could have fell flat, you know, but they both crush it. I mean, they're both so good in it.
They're like, look at us.
Right.
We're the dudes.
They're like, come on. You're going to put both of us in a scene together? It's going to be great.
Right on. Fan of both of these movies, I really am. Which one are you taking, though?
I mean, I'm taking The Dark Knight.
I agree.
Come on.
I'm going to take the newer film as well.
I mean, this
might be our first time we've both taken the newer film.
You might be right.
I think so.
It's, it's a classic. And it hasn't been around that long. But, you know, I mean, I've heard
coming people... Coming up on like 16 years?
I've heard people saying it's the greatest movie of the 21st century.
It's up there.
For sure of the 2000s decade. It holds up.
There Will Be Blood and No Country for Old Men might have a conversation or two about that one.
Can you imagine if Dark Knight came out in 2007 and they all came out in the same year?
Well, apparently they changed it to 10 movies because of The Dark Knight getting snubbed. A lot of people thought that should have been nominated for Best Picture. It did not.
Mm.
Because there were only 5 movies nominated for Best Picture at that point.
So The Dark Knight was what expanded it?
The Dark Knight shifted it. That's The Dark Knight's influence, man.
I wonder what in 08 would have been nominated ahead of it.
Let's look it up. Are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Slumdog Millionaire, Milk, Frost Nixon, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, and The Reader. How about that?
Well, that's disappointing.
I think The Dark Knight's better than all of those.
I haven't even heard of 2 of them.
I haven't heard of The Reader. I've heard of the others. But not a
You've heard
I mean,
of Frost Nixon?
I've heard of Frost Nixon.
What's
Ron Howard movie? I'm assuming it has to do with... I haven't seen the movie, but it has to do with Nixon. Anyway, I'm going to take Dark Knight over those and over Heat. But man, Heat's rocks.
Good. Heat was...
Heat rocks, dude. The action is the juice.
I think it's a fun one to watch, especially... If you're a huge Dark Knight fan, I think it's worth watching considering Nolan took so much inspiration from it. It's a good one to check out.
Right on.
And I really think, I've seen it once, I think you gotta watch it twice, I think, before you, because there's a lot going on. It's 3 hours, and there's a lot of moving pieces. So I'm sure I missed a lot, and so I want to watch it again, and I think I'll probably like it even more on the second one.
Heat, 4.5 stars for me on Letterboxd. Dark Knight, 5. So, Dark Knight's an all-timer. It's a solid
week.
But so is Heat. Man, it's a good week.
Good week.
You know what I think I'm going to do next week? You ready for this? The Big Lebowski and Inherent Vice. And you know what that means, Drew?
It's a Coen Brothers.
Coen Brothers, but Inherent Vice, that's our first Paul Thomas Anderson movie.
Woo! PTA, we coming to play.
We're here. We've made it. All right. Drew, you have a good rest of your night.
You too.
I'm going to go home, and I'm going to edit this, upload it, and you know what I'm going to do while I do that?
You're going to watch Heat?
I'm going to watch Little Women. Yeah, dude. That movie has changed my life.